Second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pat Bay Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
Huh.
Did you know that?
Huh.
Yeah.
I heard rumors.
Yeah, they are.
I've driven by. I saw their sign. It's it's lit up way late into the night.
Oh, yeah. Lights up the
LED
sky.
LED, so they're not burning a bunch of electricity.
That's right. They're very, really... very energy conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get pretty much anything you want. John Deere, tractors, implements, parts sales service. They're also a Honda generator dealer. A little bit short on generators. You may have waited too long to pick up a generator if you need one this year. There's still a few in stock, but California is experiencing a generator shortage. I think you can get some off-brand still, but... if you need a generator, you better jump on it. Also, they're a steel power products dealer. You can get all your chainsaws and trimmers and whackers and all that good stuff. Go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papaymachinery.com.
Oh, that could have been my chance.
Yeah, it could have been.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to start horning in on that.
Well, we'll try that next time, see if you pick up on it.
See if you can handle the pressure of staring at me with the silence.
Yeah.
And willing me to speak.
Yeah, that's not my forte.
The silence or staring.
Either.
Yeah, okay. Good safe answer. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, we try to always bring you guys the... kind of the rest of the story. We're not big on the let's interview a whole bunch of people or just, you know, wing it ourselves and tell you what we think, because we know you mostly don't care what we think. We had to do that a little bit at the beginning, but that's because Dr. Pry made us. So, you know, send all the hate mail to him. you know, we do like having people who are experts in their field so that you can hear more from them. And for the life of me, I don't know why the mainstream media has gone to this, you know, 1.5 minute explanation model. It's just so sad.
Yeah.
Nobody learns anything.
Nope.
And
And then it's taken as the gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes people dumber. It's just pathetic. Anyway, so we do like bringing you great people who have really a good track record and a lot of information behind them. And Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is one of our favorites. We have all of his shows linked actually on today. August 8th, 2021. You can go there and look down through the list of programs under his name. I brought the book list over to this page too. So he has The Power and the Light, Blackout Wars, The Manhattan Project, Civil Military Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. His books are all comedies, by the way. War Scare. Okay, no, they're not. But you could read them with an accent and make them slightly more fun. Although, it's information we've got to have. So not everything is, you know, happy talk. The Biden administration will give you happy talk, but we all know that's not real. And then the last one I have listed here is Poseidon, Russia's New Doomsday Machine. So, Dr. Pry, do you want to tell people what your next book is, or do we do that at the end? Your call.
Oh, we can talk about that now if you like.
I want to talk about that guy we broke off with, but so however you want to do it.
Sure. Well, let me just finish my thought about this Jeffrey Lewis character.
Okay.
That is that the mainstream media is always quoting him as if he's an expert when he's not. He's an academic political scientist who pretends that he's an expert, basically. You know, and he has an august-sounding position. You know, he's the director of non-proliferation East Asia Studies at Middlebury, at the Middlebury Institute. You know, so, I mean, you know, that's like some guy at a community college giving himself an august title like that, you know, who has never worked in the intelligence community or defense department and has no professional training, you know, in these areas. You know, and but that's enough. You know, the media has gotten itself has so little expertise that it's a matter of the blind leading the blind. And he says what they want to hear. You know, he basically tries to uphold the common wisdom that's out there among the liberals. And in this case, of the 250 new ICBM silos that China is building, Lewis has gone out there and gotten almost all the press, you know, to say, well, maybe we don't have to worry about it, because maybe even though they're building 250 silos, they're only going to deploy something like 12 ICBMs in the 250 silos.
Yeah.
And so he came up with this theory, it's called the shell game theory, that because back in the Reagan administration, we thought about a deployment mode for our Peacekeeper ICBM. It was called they called it a shell game, but it wasn't based on silos. It was based on above-ground hardened shelters, and there was a roadway, and the Peacekeeper would be mounted on a mobile tractor, and it would be moved around at night, you know, to hide in a different shelter. But Lewis is not deterred from raising this as an explanation, even though we never deployed that system because it was too expensive. People didn't think it would work. And we didn't even keep the Peacekeeper around that long. In the end, we did deploy the Peacekeeper in silos, but we didn't try playing a shell game. Every silo got a Peacekeeper missile. So if the Chinese are really going to do what we did with the Peacekeeper, every one of those silos is going to have an ICBM in it. It also just doesn't make sense because it's really hard. You know, these missiles weigh a lot. You know, you're talking about a missile that weighs 75 tons or something like that. You know, you cannot quickly and easily, you know, move something like that from one silo to another.
Hmm.
Try to fool people. It's going to be seen on satellite. So the whole theory makes no sense. But the idiots in the press just swallow it hook, line, and sinker because it gives them hope that, oh, maybe China isn't going to, you know, far surpass us in nuclear weapons. And you know, they're afraid of what the hawks, so-called hawks, the Pentagon are going to do. You know, to use that to justify our own extremely modest modernization program, you know, which isn't really a modernization program at all. It's really a matter of recycling our old nuclear weapons. All of this reminds me, you know, if you want to know about the time that we're living in now, you know, people, there's a Winston Churchill's first book in his series on the history of World War II was called The Gathering Storm. The Gathering Storm. If you want to know what our own times are, go read The Gathering Storm, because it parallels our own times just perfectly. You know, Churchill was explaining how we got into World War II. What were the Western democracies like before World War II happened? And we today are very much like what the Western democracies were in the 1930s. You know, we're extremely critical of our own civilization. We've sort of lost confidence in our own civilization. No, I won't say sort of. We have lost confidence. You know, in the 1930s, the elites and the journalists and the academics basically were blaming the Western democracies for World War I because they were capitalist and imperialist, and we weren't we didn't appreciate the aspirations of Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, that they had legitimate interests. We weren't sensitive enough to those, and the merchants of death, because we were capitalists. It was our industrial evil geniuses in the military-industrial complex that caused World War I. It was kind of an international conspiracy. None of that is true, but these are fantasies that were sort of concocted, you know, by academics and elites to explain what happened in World War I. And because of the Great Depression that came after World War I, people had lost faith in the ability of free economic and even free political institutions to work. You know, before the war happened, you know, a lot of elites and journalists and academics were in love with communism. You know, and some of them were in love with fascism and national socialism. They looked at these totalitarian systems and said, well, at least they make the trains run on time. And their people seem to have something that we've lost. You know, they seem to believe in their systems, and there's great enthusiasm to the point of fanaticism, you know, about supporting the future of their societies. They deluded themselves and couldn't see that these were all military dictatorships that were bent on conquest and revenge. And they broke all the treaties at the time, you know, the naval treaties. Germany wasn't even supposed to have an air force. Winston Churchill was constantly warning them about the Nazi buildup of military forces. And just like today, you know, the elites would come up with, they'd bend over backwards to explain away why Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany were breaking the treaties and engaging in all kinds of acts of aggression. You know, Japan had invaded China. You know, Germany took off over Austria, and then the Czech Republic walked into the Rhineland before all of that, you know, was engaged in acts of aggression. Italy was fighting a war in Abyssinia and had colonies in North Africa, you know, and all of that was explained away. You know, they came up with reasons. Oh, they, you know, we need to appease them. We need to appease them because they're doing this for their domestic audience. It's bluster. It's bluster, to use a phrase, you know, on their part, and they're not threatening us. They're trying to raise patriotism and overcome the shame of the past to their own people. So we need to appease them and go along and get along and everything will be fine. And that's pretty much the way Washington and a lot of our elites are thinking today about these actions that have come out of Russia and China and North Korea and even Iran. I mean, here we are, talk about, you know, again, unrealism, living in a fantasy world. You know, Benny Gantz, who's the new defense minister of Israel last week, said that he estimates that Iran is only 10 weeks away from an atomic bomb. And the Biden administration reaction is, well, we need to revive the Iran nuclear deal. That's the solution. We need to push harder to get the Iran nuclear deal back. You know, just an unreality, you know. And the way we saw this movie before in the 1930s, and you asked me, where's all this going? Well, if history repeats itself, where all this is going is to World War III. You know, that's what happened in the 30s. And except they didn't have nuclear weapons in the 30s. And the ability to achieve the defeat of the United States and of the Western democracies would be a lot easier for these countries today because weapons of mass destruction like nuclear weapons, like EMP, like cyber warfare, gives these adversaries tremendous asymmetrical advantages over us. You know, we're much more terrified of these weapons than they are because we are democracies and we value human life, the lives of our people, much more highly than they do. You know, the totalitarian elites of these countries are willing to sacrifice tens of millions of their people to achieve whatever goal they have in mind. And but where it could be going is another way the movie could play out. You know, is we can lose World War III and not even know it without actually having it as a shooting war. And that is what they intend. You know, Sun Tzu's first dictum is the greatest victory is to win without war. And that's what you can do with nuclear weapons. That's what makes them strategic weapons. We have talked about this before on your show, where it's a chess game. It's not a checkers game. You know, we can anticipate, well, this is what they can do with 250 DF-41 ICBMs. You know, we know they could do a successful first strike against us. So knowing that, do we dare go to the defense of Taiwan? You know, if they invade Taiwan, maybe we won't. Maybe we will do things even before that happens to pull our horns in and to appease them so that we won't be in their crosshairs. Like, for example, one of the things I think we did talk about, how we moved that B-52 bomber wing. The most important chess piece we had on the Pacific was a B-52 bomber wing in Guam. And we pulled that out and moved it back to North Dakota. What kind of a signal does that send to our allies, right? And what kind of a signal does that send to our adversaries? To them, that's a victory without having to fight war. Another thing I would add about these threats against Japan, by the way, is, first, in terms of the threat that North Korea, Russia, and China will jointly make nuclear strikes on Japan, you know, North Korea and Russia didn't say anything to contradict that. They didn't come out and say, oh, they're wrong. This is just an unofficial website, and we're not going to attack Japan. They didn't say anything like that. They were silent about it. So I think that that silence is assent. And the other person that was silent, and this is the silence that's the far more dangerous, is we were silent. You know, the President of the United States, Washington, Secretary of Defense, they didn't say anything about these threats against Japan. What a reward to our Japanese ally that is brave enough to come out and say, America, if you go to the defense of Taiwan, we are with you. We're going to be a good ally, and we're going to help you defend Taiwan. Then China says, we're going to nuke you and destroy your country and divide you up so you won't even exist as a country anymore. And we don't say anything. What kind of a message is that? This is
exactly.
Without war. This is winning without war. Mm-hmm. You know, and it can slip away from us. You know, we can find ourselves in a new world order without a war ever having been fought, just by successive blunders and neglecting the credibility of our alliance system and neglecting the credibility of our own forces.
God, that's almost like that. It's terrible, but you're making me think of that Far Side cartoon, you know, where the big finger comes, you know, the hand, all you see is the hand. It's supposed to be God. And it says, you know, I don't know what his name is, Henry destroys the world, you know, because he pulls the finger.
Pulls the finger.
Like, I'm going to find that and I'm going to post it. We need to take a really quick break here. And so in honor of the fact that we have seen this movie, too, it looks like Elton John actually wrote a song about it. So we thought we'd just play a little bit of that so you can hum a few bars while you think about the nuclear mess that befalls us if we don't pay attention.
Yep.
History is a wonderful tool. We should use it more. You were listening to We the People.
I'd rather rewrite it.
No, I thought you were going to deny it. Oh, wait. No, that's our chat room.
Oh, no.
So
ouch.
I know. So you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can see by your eyes you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too. The smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
That's everywhere in Northern California.
Yep.
Where our forests have gone unmanaged and
yep.
We've allowed
you
the...
You too could have red eyes. Just come to Northern California.
Yep. The destruction of our timber and mining industries and all of those things have led to all of this. And if you still think it's climate change, you know, I'm not going to say it, but I read somewhere that might make you an idiot. So, you know, you probably ought to have that checked.
I read that on the internet, so it's true.
That totally makes it true.
Yeah.
So anyway, just thinking about all of our communities out there who are suffering needlessly and could have been, you know, could have been doing well, could have been, making money, utilizing all these trees as a resource, but instead, you know, we're watching it all come raining out of the sky in tiny particles, which makes no sense. And so now all of these people who live in these towns that have been there since the gold rush are,
Gone. They won't get rebuilt either. There just isn't the money or the desire.
A town with 1,000 people. Yeah. I mean, this isn't just so people understand. You know, it's like, well, FEMA will come in and solve everything. Just a little FYI, the FEMA calculation depends on the wealth of your state. So it doesn't. If you can burn down an entire town, and that doesn't mean FEMA's coming in. It's a it's a mathematical calculation. So if you lived in a really poor state, many many of whom you could name. If you lived in a really poor state, that calculation is a lot easier. The threshold is easier to reach for loss. But when you lose little towns that are small, 1,000 people or less.
And your state has billions of dollars in surplus, apparently.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're not getting...
You're not getting FEMA.
The calculation doesn't come out. So don't... if you're kind of watching Northern California, you're thinking, oh, well, they'll all be able to rebuild. They'll get, you know, tax money or whatever. No, not really. That just means it's a destroyed place. And I'm sorry if you never got to go there. I guess they're burning down... Now it's burning down a place where I used to backpack all the time in college. Beautiful place, out by Junction City in Trinity County. So it's just everywhere you look. And people are, I mean, here you have folks living with other people in their camp trailer in some other town down the road, and they're wondering, did my house burn down or not? So,
I have a family member right now that's been evacuated, been living in a motorhome for about 5 days.
And the people who don't have a motorhome are living in their car or somebody's
car,
in a friend's driveway or whatever.
A tent out on some flat somewhere.
Get this. I was talking to one guy. He evacuated with his animals, you know, just dogs and things, you know, thank goodness didn't have large animals to evacuate. But they parked on he's a log truck driver and parked on a kind of side road that nobody is going to use. It's all overgrown. And they used to use it as a logging road. And, the Forest Service came and chased him off of there because he was in a day use area. You couldn't camp overnight. Yeah. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. They were sleeping because they had fled the fire. And I'm thinking, well, that was a good use of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah.
Well, they have the authority to do that, though.
Exactly.
So they flex their muscle.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And so then you have other people who have cattle who are out on rangeland that are actually keeping the fires low, eating up all that grass and whatnot, and they're out there trying to find their cattle. Before they get burned up in the fire. So just, I don't know, if you're having a great day and you can see blue sky overhead and all that, just, you know, say a prayer for some of these people because it's hell.
It is.
It is hell, and it's not over anytime soon.
It's far from over. That fire has gone. Well, I'm talking about the Dixie Fire up in Plumas. What is it? Plumas, Lassen.
It's all over the place.
It's all over. It's 400 plus 1,000 acres right now, which is, I think, in the top 10, if not one of the largest fires.
I think
fires
they said it was third. I'm going to put a, just as a little aside here, while we're on this little trail, it's August 8th, 2021. I'm going to put a link on our site for today for you. It's a really good link to a NASA and U.S. Forest Service site that where you can track what's happening with the fire. It'll give you a lot of data, probably more than you want, but you can look at the map in real time and you can see what's burning currently, what's burned previous. You can zoom in. You can't quite get to the granular street level, but the larger roads for sure. You can see the highways and different things that are going on. And so if you're having trouble getting information, that's a good spot where you can get that information yourself rather than wait or read it on. Actually, Facebook has been fairly... I was going to make a joke and say, or you can wait for Facebook, but that actually has been a fairly decent, credible source of information. So anyway, we're thinking about all you guys in the fire out there, and you've got your hands full. All right. Back to the wider fire of our lack of, I don't know, paying attention as a country. Dr. Pry, what do you think would wake these guys up on this? Or do you think they're just going to deny it until the bitter end? And what's your sense of it at this point?
You know, I keep trying to wake them up, as do a lot of my colleagues who have been in the national security field, longer than I have. Senior people in the Reagan administration, we've just gone through sort of a civilizational change, I think. Unless we can throw the bums out at some point in the future, I don't think anything is going to turn it around. For me, that's one of the reasons why Trump's defeat, as it was, I think, for many Americans, because he was an anti-establishment guy. But he didn't seem to understand that he really did need to drain the swamp. I mean, that should have been more than just a campaign word. He really did need to do that. That should have been job number one. As long as the swamp is in charge, we're heading toward catastrophe. And I don't see a Winston Churchill at the end of our tunnel, looking about the personalities, who might take over, who could be the person that would step in and save Western civilization. I don't see a Winston Churchill around these days. Maybe one will emerge, you know. Talking about your fire, and this might seem a stretch to you, okay, but in terms of what you and your people are experiencing right there, I think that it's part. I think you guys are sort of on the front line of this World War III without bullets, all right? This chess game that's being played between civilizations. Because one of the weapons that you're dealing with when you're dealing with totalitarian powers is ideas as a weapon. And we have, unfortunately, increasingly embraced the idea of socialism. And California is on the cutting edge of that among all of the 50 states. That's the way Russia and China and North Korea work, except they're obviously even more totalitarian than California is. And one of the consequences you get when you have big government, you know, and big agencies, is the little guy gets ignored because everything is centralized. And that's just for a big, gigantic, centralized government. Sacrificing the interests of the little guy, quote-unquote, is just the cost price of doing business. You know, it's the price of them accumulating political power to themselves. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and change the way government worked in California so that it worked a lot more the way it was supposed to work in the Constitution, so that the power was in the hands of local government to make most of the decisions, and then the state government would be less powerful, and the least powerful would be the federal government, which is how it's supposed to work under the Constitution, I don't think you'd be having the problems you have, you know, because those local governments and communities and industries have to live there and would be more sensitive to things going wrong and would manage the environment better. That's the way it's supposed to work. But the fact that it doesn't work that way, the fact that we've been losing the ideological war to socialism, to centralized government, is why you're in the situation you're in. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that right there in your neighborhood, you are on the front lines of this World War III that, pray God, it doesn't turn eventually into a nuclear or a conventional war. But I also hope we don't lose it without a fight, because that seems to be the way things are going, you know, where they will be able to achieve the greatest victory, as described by Sun Tzu, and achieve that victory without even having to fight war.
Sure, because, I mean, you look at these, you look at these guys that basically deny reality and they want to take out all of our dams out here. Well, I'm sorry, but where's the water coming from to fight the fires? If you don't have the reservoirs, and without the dams, you had tons of flooding. They also want to take them out with no consideration. They don't want to remove them. They just want to blow them and let them go. I'm sorry. Where in the universe can you put concrete, which is incredibly toxic? Where can you just let that go in a river, and then you're going to let millions of cubic yards of sediment just somehow go 160 miles to the ocean? That's not going to happen. It denies reality, and people think, oh, we're going to have pristine rivers with so many more fish and all this stuff, and it's like, I don't know. I got nothing nice to say.
Well, you know, that's one of the symptoms of totalitarian systems, is the big lie, operating in a fantasy world against which you can't defend. You know, certain politically, like climate change, you know, is an example of the big lie. I mean, it isn't based on science. It isn't true that, you know, that there's some kind of a consensus among climatologists that climate change, catastrophic climate change, is happening. You know, but it's used as a justification for all kinds of power grabbing and counterproductive policies that hurt the people, that hurt them, that hurt the little guy, that hurt the working people, you know, restrict their opportunities and freedom. I mean, another one is the idea that we're institutionally racist. All right.
Yeah.
You know, this is on the par with, you know, the idea that there's an international Jewish conspiracy out there, or that class warfare, Marx's model of that the classes are perpetually at war, and there has to be a revolution of the proletariat, you know, to destroy and overthrow, the other classes, and then you'll arrive at some kind of socialist workers' paradise. You know, that's what motivates people. It provides simplistic, not just simple, but simplistic answers that are, you know, untrue answers. They're basically lies, you know, that are told to garner power to the political class that wants to be, have all power in their hands, a totalitarian power in their hands. And that's why, you know, these systems, they can go on for a long time, you know, but eventually they end up self-destructing from their own internal contradictions, you know, because you can't make a system work on a lie. You know, if it's untrue, if your beliefs are fundamentally at variance with reality, eventually reality catches up with you and you end up collapsing. I mean, that's what happened to the Soviet Union, you know, and had Nazi Germany managed to conquer the world, it probably would have collapsed of its own internal contradictions, or, you know, the totalitarian powers, Imperial Japan and Italy, would have gone to war with each other and destroyed each other. So I'm not saying that in the long run we should hope for that. I would like to get our constitutional republic back and avoid having to go through a new Dark Ages in order for reality to come out with a civilization that is at a 18th or 19th or 17th century level of technology, you know, so that we can start with the Declaration of Independence all over again and the Constitution all over again. It would be nice to not lose 200 years of human progress, but right now things are looking pretty bleak.
It's just, what do you say after a while? I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating for all of the people who have tried for all these years like you have. How long have you been working on this stuff, just ballpark?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I started in the CIA in 1985, but I'd been studying it for long before that, 20 years before that. So, you know, 30, 40 years. You know, I've spent a whole professional lifetime, you know, working in this area. And I, you know, and even I've been taken by surprise, as have my colleagues, that the threat from within, you know, the crisis that was foreseen by the founders, you know, I didn't think we'd get there in our lifetime. So a lot of conservatives have been predicting it. I've been predicting it in a long time. But I shouldn't have been surprised, because it doesn't... Constitutional republics, you know, it's hard work to be a free people, you know, you know, all the signs were there to have so much power concentrated in Washington, to have so much power concentrated in these government bureaucracies and agencies, which like to think of themselves as the best and brightest, that they're the technocrats who know all the better. But when you actually meet these people and have to work with them, as I have,
oh, for God's sake, don't
really
even get me started.
You know,
I'm still trying to get a written answer from the FCC on a rule that's right in their rule book. All I wanted them to do is confirm an application of their rule, which basically is their rule, stated with a human overlay. You know, hey, if this happens, that rule applies, right? This has been going on for months, absolutely months, and I can't get a straight answer from them. It's like,
don't have to be afraid because they can't get fired.
Yeah.
They're getting paid enormous amounts of money to not do their job.
And so, of course, people are like, well, why can't you get an answer from them? I'm like,
Because who are you?
Yeah.
You're just a member of the public. You're just the people. You know? They're the new aristocracy.
Exactly.
You know, they don't feel they have to answer to us anymore. You know, they don't see us as their boss, which is the way the people are supposed to be viewed. We are like subjects.
Yeah.
We're subjects, you know? And we're lucky that they don't take retaliatory action against us for speaking up and making their life uncomfortable.
Come out and crush us like the bugs that we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, their new form of raid, I guess, is spreading money all over the world and making sure people don't go back to work. And you just look at all that stuff and you think, this doesn't end anywhere.
Well,
good.
We're paying for it. We're starting to pay for it right now. We haven't paid for a fraction of it.
No, it has not come home to roost.
No, look at the inflation.
So I think this break we will celebrate the crazy and give you a couple of musical highlights to the insanity, just in case you didn't have anything to hum along with as you were frustrated. You're listening to We the People. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Someone said, while you're a part of Crack-A-Bug's palace, do what the rest don't do. Or face the fact that Crack-A-Bug's palace may have no other choice than to deport you.
Told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not. Oh no. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, when out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
Yeah, so if that song has been playing in the back of your mind, we know who you are. That's my favorite Crazy Person song, actually.
Yeah.
I had several to choose from, but that is my hands-down favorite. I figure if we can't beat them, we can at least mock them. What do you think, Dr. Pry?
What is the name of that song? I've never heard of that. You have such a gift for choosing songs.
That is one of my favorites from Joni Mitchell. It's called Twisted.
Twisted, okay.
Twisted by Joni Mitchell. It's been around for a long time, and it's like she just strings it together in a way that's just lilting and fun, but when you listen to the words, it's, you know. Super fitting and somewhat timely for the era we're living in.
Yes, I think so. I agree. It's just, I hope you can get back control of your state in California to roll back the tragedy that's ruining people's lives. All these things are connected, you know. We tend to think of foreign policy and domestic policy, you know, as separate things, but you know they're synergistically related. You know, the more we go down the path of incompetence and socialism and trusting our fate to elites who are grossly incompetent, you know, the greater we are at risk for a World War III. Or losing World War III without a bullet being fired, finding ourselves in a new world order dominated by countries that want to destroy us, you know, or enslave us, you know, and
Well, look at what's happening, you know, just at the local level. You know, at the local level, we're going to have, you know, variant number 75. I think we're going to run out of, you know, the Greek. I believe that's not going to go long enough. We'll be at Zulu in moments. But actually, I did see a little meme that said the final corona variant is communism. So I was like, right. yes, I'm seeing that now.
We'll all have to get the shot for that one.
Exactly. Yeah. So the shot works. The shot doesn't work. If you get the shot, you don't have to wear the mask. You got to wear the mask. I mean, we've all heard this, right? The circular logic, yeah. And yet you have people who are routinely terrified. And just in case you're not reading anything outside of, you know, mainstream whatever and CNN and whatnot, guys, I don't care what you call it, fear porn, panic porn, but bottom line, it's like porn. People are addicted to it, you know.
Yeah.
What's happening with the coronavirus? Go live your life. Good Lord. You know, go and live your life.
They're sheeple. And, you know, those people who, you know, want to wear the mask, they worship Dr. Fauci, and they hang on every word that the CDC says. People who like that, to those fellow citizens among us, you know, they're not the way, they're not the kind of people that the founding fathers had in mind.
No, and the funny part is, I mean, you actually have said something that's really very insightful. They hang on every word. You literally do have to hang on every word, because if you hang on the complete sentences, they don't make any sense. So you got to focus just one word at a time. Otherwise, you start to put the picture together. It's to get those people to go along with policy that will ultimately enslave them is all part and parcel the same concept. You know, it's just the same idea.
Yeah. George Orwell warned us about this in his book, 1984. You know, there's a scene toward the end of the book where Winston, the hero of the book, is fallen into the hands of Big Brother, and he's being tortured, and I can't remember how many fingers he holds up, but he keeps holding up like three or four fingers, and keeps asking Winston, how many fingers am I holding up? And Winston keeps telling him the truth, the number of fingers that he actually says. He says, no, I'm holding up one finger, okay? And they don't relent with the torture until he finally tells the lie and actually sees. He actually thinks he sees the one finger being held up. And then they've broken him, you know? And the process we're going through with the masks and all of this stuff is right out of 1984, except on a massive scale where the whole population is basically being tortured and lied to and expected to defer to Big Brother and trust Big Brother, no matter how irrational it is, no matter how contradictory of logic and the facts it is, and no matter how too many times Big Brother is obviously wrong, you know, they're winning because they have so many of our people in our population that are willing to go along with that are willing to say that there's one finger being held up, even though it's three or four. It's anything but one. And that is one of the scariest things, you know, that it's so easy for people to lose their freedom, you know, when they lose their ability to think critically, to trust themselves, trust their own judgment, trust the logic,
mm-hmm.
you know? You know, we've got a large segment of the population that just are party animals, you know? And they might as well be Nazis or communists. If the party says it's so, it must be true. And we've got a big chunk of our population that thinks and acts just that way. And perhaps an inevitable consequence of our media, all the major institutions of the country, our educational institutions, our entertainment institutions, haven't been taken over by that crowd. You know, we conservatives perhaps have had too much faith for too long in human nature, that human nature is inherently, you know, going to be skeptical and resistant to power, But really, it's not true. You have to teach people to think critically. And we haven't been doing that for a long time. You know, we've ignored the classics for a long time and the history for a long time. And we're lucky. We're probably among the last generation that was taught in the classical tradition, you know, which the founders believed was necessary. They called it virtue, you know, and it was the ultimate check on tyranny was a virtuous people. And that doesn't just mean that you want to be good and adhere to Judeo-Christian values, but part of virtue is being able to do the hard work of being free, to inform yourself, to think critically, you know, to not trust government, you know, to be suspicious of government, because freedom is hard work. And they always wanted people, that's why they wanted government at the local level, so people could have the greatest control over their lives. And the elites at the local level would be directly subject to the supervision and punishment of the people. And it's why we have a Second Amendment, too. Because if all else fails, well, then the people, you know, are the ultimate check on tyranny. But fortunately, I try to end this on a somewhat positive note, maybe we're all Winston Churchill. Maybe we've got an opportunity for all of us. Part of having virtue also is not looking for the man on the white horse to rescue you. You know, you're going to rescue yourselves. You're going to work with your neighbors and rescue yourselves. We actually do have the ability to turn this all around within our power just by saying no.
Yeah.
You know, without guns, without violence, just by saying no. Your radio show, you're like the committees of correspondence that bear before the American Revolution, you and your fellow conservative radio shows that are truth tellers, that give people an opportunity to hear the truth, to reach out, see, oh, there is a voice of sanity out there somewhere, you know, so they can think for themselves, maybe get organized by themselves. If 85 million Americans at some point, you know, say, no, we're not going to pay our taxes until you prove that you were legitimately elected to power, because we don't believe that the elections were free and fair. We want to know that all future elections are going to be held according to the law, the way the law provides, you know, and not rigged the way you guys are trying to rig them. We're not going to let you educate our children in critical race theory and turn them into a bunch of racists. We're not going to let you take our guns. You know, we're not going to give up our property. You know, you're not obeying the law. You're not protecting our borders. You're enforcing laws selectively. We're going to do the same thing, you know, until you start obeying the law. They can't put 85 million people in jail. And, you know, the greatest tyranny in world history was the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact states. And the elites of those countries were masters of being able to manipulate the levers of power to enslave people. Well, we don't have that problem. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Biden, these people are pikers compared to what the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact was. And I think that if they keep pushing in this direction, eventually people can get organized and just say no.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be like Ceausescu. You know, it's actually on tape. The moment Ceausescu lost power, he was given one of his six-hour speeches, and people just got sick of it. You know, the wall had come down in Berlin, and they said no to him. And the look on his face, you could just tell the cognitive dissonance. He couldn't believe it. You know, the people were rising up against him by refusing to obey his orders. And Ceausescu was out in a few months after that. And the whole Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact were thrown on the ash heap of history in less than 2 years without a lot of bloodshed. There was some, but there wasn't much. You know, it was largely a peaceful revolution. We can do the same, and I hope we do the same. You know, because it's also right in our Constitution. You know, I think it's
exactly.
I'm sorry,
yeah, we just hit the wall. We just hit the wall,
right.
And we've got to run. So you can go back to the store and finish the shopping.
Believe me, I will have to.
No.
God bless you, Dr. Yes. Peter Vincent Pry has been our guest this hour, and we love him. Both hours, actually.
Where the street wide, the knee, by the right.